continuing with Auschwitz. On Sundays, the stadium was the excited hub of sports activity, but on weekdays, the vast field lay quiet and empty. Only a barbed wire fence separated the stadium from number one crematorium. I wanted very much to know just what went on in the shadow of the immense stack, which never ceased spewing tongues of flame. From where I was sitting, there wasn't much one could see, and to approach the barbed wire was unwise, for the watchtower machine gun sprayed the area without warning to frighten away anyone who happened to wander into this no man's land. Nevertheless, I saw that a group of men in civilian clothes was lining up in the crematorium courtyard, directly in front of the red brick building. There were about 200 in all, with an SS guard in front. It looked to me like a roll call, and I assumed that this was the night watch being relieved by the oncoming day watch. For the crematoriums ran on a 24-hour schedule, as I learned from a fellow prisoner, who also informed me that the crematorium personnel were known as the Sonderkommando, which means merely commandos assigned to special work. They were well-fed and given civilian clothes. They were never permitted to leave the grounds of the crematorium, and every 4 months, when they had learned too much about the place for their own good, they were liquidated. Till now, such had been the fate of every Sonderkommando since the founding of the KZ. This explains why no one had ever escaped to tell the world what had been taking place inside these grim walls for the past several years. I returned to Barracks 12 just in time for Dr. Mengele's arrival. He drove up and was received by the barracks guard, then sent for me and asked me to join him in his car. This time there was no guard with us. We were gone before I even had time to say goodbye to my colleagues. He stopped in front of the camp office and asked Dr. Sentgiller to get my card, then started off again along the bumpy road. For about 12 minutes we drove through the labyrinth of barbed wire and entered well-guarded gates, thus passing from one section to another. Only then did I realize how vast the KZ was. Few people had the possibility of verifying that fact, because the majority died at the very place to which they were sent when they first arrived. Later I learned that the Auschwitz KZ had, at certain periods, held more than 100,000 people within its enclosure of electrified barbed wire. And a translator's note reads, Haas, the camp commander, testified at Nuremberg that the camp held 140,000 prisoners when filled to capacity. Unquote. Continuing with Miklos. Dr. Mengele suddenly interrupted my meditations. Without turning, he said, The place I'm taking you to is no sanatorium, but you'll find that conditions there are not too bad. We left the camp and skirted the Jewish unloading ramp for about 300 yards. A large armored gate in the barbed wire opened behind the guard. We went in. Before us lay a spacious courtyard covered with green grass. The gravel paths and the shade of the pine trees would have made the place quite pleasant had there not been at the end of the courtyard an enormous red brick building and a chimney spitting flame. We were in one of the crematoriums. We stayed in the car. An SS ran up and saluted Dr. Mengele. Then we got out, crossed the courtyard, and went through a large door into the crematorium. Is the room ready? Dr. Mengele asked the guard. Yes, sir, the man replied. We headed towards it, Dr. Mengele leading the way. The room in question was freshly whitewashed and well lighted by a large window, which, however, was barred. The furnishings, after those of the barracks, surprised me. A white bed, a closet, also white. A large table and some chairs. On the table, a red velvet tablecloth. The concrete floor was covered with handsome rugs. I had the impression I was expected. The Sonderkommando men had painted the room and outfitted it with objects that the preceding convoys had left behind. We then passed through a dark corridor until we reached another room, a very bright, completely modern dissecting room with two windows. The floor was of red concrete. In the center of the room, mounted on a concrete base, stood a dissecting table of polished marble, equipped with several drainage channels. At the edge of the table, a basin with nickel taps had been installed. Against the wall, three porcelain sinks. The walls were painted a light green, and large barred windows were covered with green metal screens to keep out flies and mosquitoes. We left the dissecting room for the next room, the workroom. Here there were fancy chairs and paintings. In the middle of the room, a large table covered with a green cloth. All about, comfortable armchairs. I counted three microscopes on the table. In one corner, there was a well-stocked library, which contained the most recent additions. In another corner, a closet, in which were stowed white smocks, aprons, towels, and rubber gloves. In short, the exact replica of any large city's Institute of Pathology. I took it all in, paralyzed with fright. As soon as I had come through the main gate, I'd realized that I was on death's path. A slow death. Opening its maddening depths before me. I felt I was lost. Now I understood why I had been given civilian clothes. This was the uniform of the Sonderkommando, the commando of the living dead. My chief was preparing to leave. He informed the SS guard that as far as service, quote unquote, was concerned, I depended exclusively on him. The crematorium's SS personnel had no jurisdiction over me. The SS kitchen had to provide my food. I would get my linen and supplementary clothing at the SS warehouse. For shaves and haircuts, I had the right to use the SS barbershop in the building. I would not have to be present for the evening or morning roll call. Besides my laboratory and anatomical work, I was also responsible for the medical care of all the crematorium's SS personnel, about 120 men, as well as the Sonderkommando, about 860 prisoners. Medicines, medical instruments, dressings, all in sufficient quantity, were at my disposal so that they should receive suitable medical attention. I had to visit all those sick in the crematorium once a day and sometimes even twice. I could circulate among the four crematoriums without a pass from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. I would have to make out a daily report to the SS Commandant and to the Sonderkommando Obersturmführer Musfeld, listing the number of ill, bedridden, and ambulatory patients. I listened, almost paralyzed, to the enumeration of my rights and duties. Under such conditions, I would be the Katzet's most important figure. Were I not in the Sonderkommando, and were all this not taking place in the number one crema? Dr. Mengele left without a word. Never did an SS, no matter how low in rank, greet a KZ prisoner. I locked the door to the dissecting room. From now on, it was my responsibility. And until next week, peace.